All right, we're back for another episode of Season 2, Real Talk with QBV, and we are very excited to be joined today by former NFL lineman Corey Proctor. And this is also our first offensive lineman we've had on our podcast, so we're very excited about that. Thanks for joining, Corey.
Heck yeah. Mike, Jake.
Absolutely, absolutely. So first thing we'll talk about is just a little bit about your playing career, and we'll start with kind of going back to your college career. So just kind of talk about, you know, what your experience was like at Montana and just what it was like to be able to win a national championship and things like that.
Montana was awesome. And actually, when I was recruited out of high school, I had a lot of Pac-10 interest. And so I had had an early offer from BYU and then had a lot of great just from the west side of the States, because I was from Washington State, had a lot of West Side interest, and it was really good. I had ended up having my knee scoped during the season my senior year, so a lot of that D1 interest fell off, and all the big Sky teams came in. So that's why I chose Montana. It's not like they came, I didn't intend on going there right away. Kind of held out for the bigger schools to hopefully pick me up, but you know, Montana ended up being the best place that I could ever go to. And, you know, there's not a lot of places where you can go and be competitive, have a shot to win the title, let alone win your conference just about every year, have the crowd support that they have there, and then have a good history with that school of opportunity for guys to go on to the next level if they can make it. And so, it ended up being one of the best places ever. They crazy crowds, made some lifelong friends there. And I'd say we won a national title my freshman year, 2001. And that was awesome. I started like 5 games that year and had a little bit of time in most the rest of them. And then senior year, we lost in the finals, which sucked. But because we were on fire heading into that game. And I think it was James Madison, who just got their running game going, and we basically didn't see the field in the second half of the game. But I tell you what, we won a lot of games there. I don't know what their win percentage at home there right now, but when I was there, it was about 92%. And since opening that stadium, and you don't get that everywhere in the country, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty special place. So I was excited to head back for homecoming this year until COVID hit and rearranged those plans. But now they're looking at playing in the spring. So hopefully hit a game up then.
Right. Absolutely. That's awesome. That sounds like an awesome experience. That's for sure.
Yeah. You just talked about it. You're saying how you started fresh. You got into a couple games, started for 5 games as a freshman. So what was that going into a big school like that and starting for 5 games, even getting PT throughout the season? So what gave you kind of an edge over the other freshmen or other linemen that you're competing with?
Coming in, excuse me. I've always been a really coachable guy. Mm-hmm. And so coaches were like father figures to me coming from a split family.
Yeah.
And I apologize. I think that mute button is fantastic for when you gotta hack up a lung. But I came in. One, it was my coachable my ability to be coached, right? And I had a work ethic that was really fostered from that, because those were like father figures to me. You know, every time a coach gave me a little bit of positive reinforcement, that just reinforced my work habits. And, mm-hmm. and so that was a big deal to me. So I became this insane worker. And so they loved that, right? And just because I would listen to you as a coach, you loved me even more. So that was a huge piece for me personally. But besides that, my best O-line coach that I've ever had playing the game of football was Chad Germer. Was my O-line coach, and he's there. He's been to a couple different teams now since I've been gone, but he's back at Montana right now. The guy is amazing. Is crazy. There's a lot of coaches that will say I'm big on technique, but are actually full of themselves and they have no idea what they're talking about. Well, this guy actually is this. He is a technique master. And when you combine technique with attitude and a coach that gives a damn about you, that's you got some juice to be successful. And so that's what that guy was to me. And I mean, he got on my ass a lot, but he also cared for you a lot. And so that was really what was, gave him the ability to be on everybody's ass all the time, but especially mine coming in into a new place. That's what helped me be successful. And so that was a huge deal for me.
Right. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think that's great. You said the first thing is just being coachable, because so many high school guys that are superstar mm-hmm. at their high school, they go in their freshman year and they think they know everything. They think they're the best, all that stuff. So, yeah, I think that's definitely the main thing, is kind of being coachable. So now,
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Well, I just say a lot of you guys do fall into that, right? You get a lot of guys, they get pampered. And I think enough, God kind of put enough jolts in my life where I couldn't be worried about being pampered or getting things my way. My folks split early on. So that was kind of a stressful environment coming into new relationships, their new marriages and new siblings. And my junior year of high school, we lost my head coach of our football team to a car accident after the third game. And so there were some crazy things that went on during that timeline that really forced your attention away from yourself. And so even though a recruiting process can be a ball about me, I still valued, the coach's opinion so much that, ultimately I had to make that choice for myself. But, all the coaches that recruited me, they were like, same thing. Those were like gods to me. Right? Like I wanted those guys. It would be so exciting for me just to be on that phone call and for them wanting to talk to me, that it got my attention off of myself and more on more important things. And so I think that was huge, where a lot of guys, they get pampered a little bit to the point where, it is all about me. And so the parents pamper them and pamper that choice. And, they're looking for, all right, what can you give me over this coach in this place? Well, that's not necessarily the attitude to take, because a lot of places are going to have unique things to offer. But it's really like, where does the guy fit? Where's the guy going to want you to be? To ultimately be a bigger badass of where you are, of what you are now. And that's going to be the biggest thing. So, I think a lot of parents and guys kept that in mind. Like, ultimately this is an investment of myself and my time and my relationships with people. And like, if I get that, like, you seem like a guy that I would want to be coached by and I could submit to in that relationship. That's a huge deal. So,
yeah,
there you go.
Absolutely. I wish I'm a college coach. I wish more recruits thought that way. That's for sure.
I bet.
So now, you had a great career at Montana, obviously a 4-year starter, a national championship. So what was it like going into the draft process? I'm sure you wanted to be drafted, obviously. And what was it like to go undrafted and just get into NFL from being an undrafted free agent?
Man, that was a weird experience to me. Because they projected me the highest potentially, my agents in the fifth round. But obviously that didn't happen. And so same thing, where my agents were kind of now my coach in this transition. We ended up at the end, ended up being between Detroit, Dallas, and Atlanta that they thought were good choices, who wanted to bring me in. And at the time, Dallas had drafted a lineman, Rob Petitti, at the time in the sixth round, and Atlanta hadn't, and Detroit hadn't, but Detroit looked like a more attractive place to make the team. And so we chose there. And I tell you what, I was one of those guys who needed a transition year on practice squad, who needed that time. Because I wasn't a redshirt freshman. I didn't redshirt in college. So I was young coming in, and I had to adjust to the game and adjust to different guys in general. I mean, like I went from, I tell a lot of people, man, I came from basically an Abercrombie and Fitch high school to, you know, to Montana that had like five black guys on the team to Detroit. And so I'm like, I'm the minority all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that means I'm diving into a different culture. I'm diving into a different league, a different team, and a business essentially around the game. And that was a shock for me. And so I needed time to, I was just a guy who just shut up. I didn't really say anything and I just showed up to work. And so that's why Matt Millen, who was our GM at the time, Steve Marriott, who was a head coach, Pat Morris was our O-line coach. That's why those guys liked me a lot because, all right, I might not have been where they wanted to be, but I'd come in and work and I didn't say anything. So that time was great because, you know, where I would get overhyped and kind of play with a lot of my feet in cement, you know, that was time for me to relax and get accustomed to the place where I could play football again and not be so overhyped about the situation.
Yeah.
And so that ended up being great because Mariucci got let go. We sucked as a football team. We're totally awful. And then last five games of the season, Dallas picks me up. And I went from like one of a handful of guys in the weight room all the time to the whole team in Dallas. And this was way more my kind of group of guys. And I think that came from Parcells where he was recruiting this type of guy. And he also made it mandatory to be in the weight room. but I became that changes the culture of everybody right now. At least I have a place where I can win from instead of dealing with, you know, a group of guys that are just kind of meandering into the facility every day. And so it was ended up being, I needed that time on practice squad coming in, just because that gave me time to acclimate to everything.
Definitely. You just were talking about a little bit how you went from the Dolphins to the Cowboys and you ended up in Miami for a little, but you talked about it a little bit, but the culture, like we see all these NFL teams, we're always wondering like what's the locker room actually like, and like you talked about it a little bit, but what was the difference in culture between those three teams that you ended up getting to play for?
Culture is huge, man. And it starts in the workplace. You think of any relationship you've had, like probably the closest relationships you have are born from respect.
Yeah.
And so like you guys meet for the first time and you show up into the weight room or the coach's room or the film or whatever it is. And you start getting a feel for how this other guy is working. Mm-hmm. Right. And what happens eventually is like, if you like that or you're similar or you see somebody else working or maybe they make you a little better or vice versa, respect comes from that. Right. And so like, okay, now I'll start. If I see if you're one of these guys, like I want to hang out with you. That's what Mark Colombo was to me in with the Cowboys when I got there. But what happens is in that respect, you start working with each other a whole lot. Well, naturally from respect, it's born a relationship or a friendship. And so now you guys want to hang out. Hey, you want to go grab something to eat? You know, now you're hanging out outside of the facility. Well, the thing is if I never get a chance to see you in that light, those relationships aren't born. And so, what I saw as I reflected kind of what happened in the difference between Detroit and Dallas and partially in Miami, I wasn't there as long, but between Detroit and Dallas, Detroit, I tell you, is one of five handful of guys that were in the weight room constantly, right? Who wanted to be there. Maybe it's not the same program, but I remember the strength coaches there. There was one that I really got along with who's awesome. Who's over in Washington now, but they were almost pushing us out of the weight room because they were afraid of getting us hurt.
Yeah.
And getting bitched out about at from the coaches, you know, from getting somebody hurt in the weight room. Well, Parcells wanted you in the weight room. He knew you had to be strong enough. Your body had to be strong enough to handle the brunt of the game.
Yeah.
And so he would do that. And it was also a testing, almost like an incubator to see who was willing to step up to some work. Right. And it's totally different when you get to the football field. But basically, let me test this guy out in this environment before I get him into this environment. And it's almost a graduation process. Well, So now here's the thing is when you make it mandatory, the whole team has to come together in this work environment. And I have to watch you work now. And I even remember one time, Fridays were always a long distance days. Like, you know, Mondays were doubles or quads or, you know, full gas, stuff like that. Fridays were a long distance days where we'd run 200, 300, 400, stuff like that. And I remember one, Roy Williams, our safety at Oklahoma, he always used to make deals with Joe Jurassic, our strength coach. like we were supposed to run like, I don't make it something up right now, like 3 600s, you know? And he'd be like, can we run 1 800? So Joe would do it. He'd cut a deal. And like that 1 800, that would be the worst thing you could ever possibly run. Cause this is not just a jog, you know, this is like a freaking 80% strider all the way around a couple of football fields. And I remember one day the linemen are running and I always like to be first. I'm super competitive. Like, didn't mean I won every time, but I want to be first. And so I'm beating everybody out. I usually have pretty good stamina. And so I'm beating everybody out. Well, Jay Ratliff, one of our D tackles, right? He comes and ends up pulling up in like the last quarter of the run, pulling ahead of me. Right. Well, he kind of shot his wad to pass me up right there. And I turned on the jets in the last stretch of the run, the last 100 yards or so, and end up passing him. Yeah. So we both ended up jockeying each other, but I passed him in the end. Well, you know what happens right then. After that, we're sitting there breathing and trying to gasp for our life. But he's like, all right, nice job. Nice job, Proc. Well, then our equipment guy standing there and our trainer standing there with a jug of water. He was like, good fucking run, Proc, right? Like, these guys are battling. And it's not that, like, I won necessarily. Yeah, that's part of it. But it's we're battling to the end. Yeah. We're not falling off like chunks. Yeah. And so what happens is, all right, Jay and I fought a lot in practice, but we also have a respect and a mutual relationship with each other that you won't find anywhere else in the workplace. And so anyways, I know this is a long explanation, but all of that is a foundation to provide a culture of winning for your team. And so that was the biggest difference between those two teams that I saw. And if you don't do those things, you might as well fold it in. You're cashing a paycheck at that point.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome. I know you just kind of talked about it a little bit, but what's, you know, what was it like to play for Bill Parcells? I got to ask that question.
Yeah.
Dude, this guy, I mean, you guys are East Coast, right? I can tell it in your voice.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Okay. So like, I love this guy. It's kind of funny because I'm like, people who are not on the East Coast, they don't get them, right? Because this is like, it's this way more blunt attitude. Like, I can call you a dick and still be buddies in the next second, right? Like, it's no big deal. Well, that's what he was, right? So he was like kind of like a Bronx, New York kind of guy anyway. Yep. So he would sit there and trash you all day long. And if you could handle it, he loved you. You guys know how it is. Somebody crumbles under that, that's like the worst thing you could possibly do. But then it doubles, or you're just like, forget about that guy. And so when he called me Grizz coming out of Montana. So he used to call me Grizz, but he liked me a lot just from that work and that like desire to fight somebody. And so he was pretty ruthless in his commentary. Right. But this guy, when he did give a piece of positive reinforcement or something, that was a massive gift to you. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this guy, I remember cool story. We had a guy, Oliver Hoyt, who was one of our linebackers. We ran a 3-4 base defense when Parcells was there. And we ran a lot of these TED plays, these outside 8 and 9 hole zone plays, right? And I pulled in training camp more times than you could imagine. And so it was both sides, but a lot, they liked me because I could get out on the perimeter, I could move. But like, they were TED, you'd always have a full black by the tackle tight end and place that guard would pull around and hit the mic, right? So him and I were button heads all camp long and killing it. And so it was funny because we played New Orleans in the preseason game and he was on kickoff. We're watching film of the game afterwards the next day. And he and Oliver Hoyt, our line, one of our linebackers, is beating wide receivers down the field, right? And so one, Parcells starts like just starts beating every all the receivers up for getting beat by a linebacker right now. He's just tearing them apart. Well, on the backside of that, he goes, "Nice hustle, Hoyt." He goes, "By the way, do you ever talk to your mother?" He's like, "Yeah, what's up?" He goes, "Why don't you go ahead and give her a call after this and tell her you just made the Dallas Cowboys?" Wow. And like all of a sudden, like the whole place erupted.
Wow.
And it was the coolest thing. And what he ended up doing was we had so many linebackers, he moved him to fullback. And he ended up being a lead blocker and he got a little punch drunk, but he ended up destroying people that year.
Mm.
And it was one of the coolest things to see. I mean, he told me one time, I came into the locker or come into the weight room and he was like, he's on the elliptical. And he goes, "How you doing, Grizz?" Like, "I'm doing all right." He's a hard one to have a conversation with, right? But like, I'm like, "I'm all right." He goes, "You're doing pretty good, Grizz. You flop back and forth between both guards." He goes, "You know the plays. You're pretty smart. You're no fucking genius. All right? But you're pretty smart." And I'm like, "All right." He would always give you backhanded, but I tell you what, for a guy to be like that ruthless on people when he gave one to you, that was big.
Right.
That's I love that guy. He'll always be cool to me. So
yeah,
there you go.
That's awesome. Yeah, I had to ask that. My dad's a huge Bill Parcells fan. When I was younger, I you know watch his teams and everything like that. So that's awesome. Who would you say is the hardest guy that you had to block, whether it was someone on the Cowboys or someone else around the NFL?
Dude, there's lots of guys are different, but one of the hardest guys to ever block was that two Justin Smith at a San Francisco. There was a black guy and a white guy. And I never touched the other guy, the black guy, but like the white guy had to go against all the time. He wore last couple of years. He had the tricep issue. Yep. So he wore a brace. That guy was one of the hardest to deal with ever because when they're running the 3-4 defense and having to slide out as a guard, this guy took he was a great ball player, good technique, but then he was freaking tough as hell, like hard nose. And he could turn the right angle and hit you on a corner and – it was a fight for your life to hold on at that point. For me, it was. I'm like, I'm not a big, you know, I don't have a hefty ass to hold on to a lot of weight. So, like, this guy, he was hard to work with. So, that was by far one of my toughest chores was to block that guy for sure.
Right, right. And he was a beast. He played a while, too. He was in the NFL for a long time.
Yeah. So he earned his keep, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So now kind of get into some things, a couple things we wanted to ask, just kind of like for our athletes. We train, you know, a lot of youth, high school, college guys. So as you know, like during these crazy times, a lot of the leagues, a lot of seasons have been canceled and everything like that. So, you know, what are some things that you think that athletes should be doing during these, you know, unique times, unique situations? What are some things that they should do just to kind of stay active and stay in the game?
Man, well, first, especially if you're a high school guy, you need to, like, one, you need to get all your training in, but you need to blast that stuff all over social media, especially Twitter. I'm like, bro, if you guys coaching, right, what happened when you guys got shut down in the recruiting process? We had nothing else to do but sit here and scroll all day long.
Right.
And so – I got a buddy here in Keller, Texas, who I love to death, but he's a big body, but it's not like he had any crazy junior season or not. But he put a bunch of weight on in the summer, and he posted everything. He posted his 40, his short shuttles, his bench, his like random workouts, field drills that he was working with a D-line coach. He's posting everything and was active on Twitter in reaching out to coaches. And so what happened was that you just get a message from some guy now who wants to be recruited, which coaches get all kinds of messages from, right? And so now, okay, you take the chance to scroll down your stuff and take a look at just a couple of videos. You're like, okay, this guy might have something. And so what you're just trying to do is you're trying to create a conversation. And this guy ended up getting, I think it was like four or five different scholarship offers from smaller schools just from doing that. Coming into a senior, hadn't played a senior down at all, and he already got offers on the table. And so that's a huge deal. So like one, if you're looking to play at next level, it's just where we're at right now. We're already in there before, but COVID just accelerated this 10 times faster. But use social media as a tool. Yes. Right? Don't let it use you as the tool. And so use that to essentially like show people, what do I want them to see, especially coaches? What do I want my future employer to see in me, and blast it all out there. And then I guess obviously academically, you got to lock that stuff down. And that's, you know, what's nice about this is Zoom calls, we can get personal with each other a little more, maybe I might not have been able to lock you in for an in-person meeting, but a lot more people are way more available to make themselves or will make themselves available for a 15-minute Zoom call than, you know, potential 30-minute hour meeting. So I would utilize that if I was guys trying to make sure I'm staying on top of my academics, trying to cover that base, trying to think of anything else, but those are kind of some of the biggest things. I don't know if you guys see this down here at all, but I'll see some guys that have scholarship offers and decide to get burned out on sports or whatever. And they'll just decide not to play anymore. And, which I'm a little opposite of that. I wasn't before, where I just kind of, you know, I would listen to what my coaches told me, but now I'm way more purposeful in my steps and what I'm doing. So I remember I met a guy, he wanted to go to engineering school. He goes, well, I want to be an engineer. I don't want to play football anymore. And I go, that's awesome. But here's the thing. Engineering school costs a lot of money. And I go, football, if that's willing to pay for engineering school or something that will segue into that, use it as a tool, right? I'm not saying don't do the Albert Hainsworth and just get the deal and be lazy. Coach will hate you. You don't want to do that. You want to respect your part of the deal. But use it as a tool to pay for the life that you want, or at least get an invested head start on it, where, you know, we live in this student debt crisis. I call it a crisis. It's not my crisis. I don't want us to pay any of this thing off. People should be handling their debts. But, you know, we live in a place where the government makes it easy to go fall into debt. And they provide an awful example of it. But so many people just, they'll go out and sign up for a debt that they can never pay, or it'll take them their whole life. And I'm like, let's not do that, right? Let's make sure you get life onto a good start. And if you got a vehicle to pay for that, do it. So.
Definitely. You were also just talking about a little bit about the athletes, and mostly like we want to talk about linemen in particular right now, but like, what are some of the most important skills that you think for linemen trying to get either to a Division I level or even to the NFL that they should really focus on to have the opportunity? Like you were talking about, the guy was doing a bunch of D-line work. So what are some of the things that you think personally that will help them get to that next level that everyone dreams to be?
Play more than one sport.
Okay.
I think it was Saban did a study at Alabama. You are four times more likely to get a scholarship at Alabama if you played more than one sport. You're a multi-sport athlete.
Okay.
Right. That's a huge deal. Where so many people, you see it in baseball a lot, especially, right? But so many people want to specialize in that one sport, and you're like, here's the thing: is the body has a ton of different modalities. You have lots of different movement patterns to create the athlete. And so, especially when you're talking about a guy who's still in adolescent development, this guy has leaps and bounds in athletic development to go, not just in football, but in other areas that will help him in football, if that's where he wants to go, right? And so I wrestled in high school. Wrestling helped me as a lineman incredibly. I had I could change levels really easy. My flexibility was a lot stronger than other guys who maybe just spent the next the whole off season in the weight room, you know? Mm-hmm. But I became a way better athlete because of it. So go play basketball, go do something else. I wouldn't say just be a thrower, because be a full body athlete. I don't want to say those guys aren't, but go do something to develop your whole body, and challenges your lungs somewhat. And so play a winter sport, play a spring sport if you want to, but do something more than just football. That develop yourself as an athlete as a whole. I can't tell you how many recruiters came and watched me during the winter when they were recruiting me in wrestling practice or right. on a match. And that was huge, because now they're seeing me lead as a captain of the wrestling team, doing wind sprints, seeing my work capacity in a different place. You know, and I'm like, am I just some slob wrestling around on the mat who looks like crap in a different area? You know, because what happens when we get to the college levels? There's winter conditioning. There's a lot of mat drills that go on there. There's a lot of other places that we go to. So do an extra sport. 100%.
Yeah, I love that. Completely agree with it myself too. I'll definitely have to share along with what you're just saying, because we train some old linemen too. So that'll be great for them to be able to hear that. That's for sure. So what are, you know, post football career and everything like that? So just kind of talk about some things that you're doing now.
So now I do two things. My main line of work is Pro Capital Wealth Management. That's my company. So I'm financial advisor, independent, and I'll handle family and business portfolios. Luckily, I had somebody who did well for me when I was playing ball, and I peppered her to death with questions, and where she had to learn me up. And so I became well-versed in my own portfolio. And this is, I'd encourage anybody else who's going through this. I know you're focusing on your craft, which is great, but don't let that be a reason to die in another one. And so, sure. You know, I have awesome clients and who are heavily involved with their portfolio, and that I'm obviously an active manager of. And so I do that. And anybody that wants to check that out, procapitaltx.com. And then on the side, I do a lot of speaking gigs, and that was born from my faith. Well, we've had some crazy stuff go on in our life, man. And I'm lucky God brought me to the point he did, man. Cause I'm glad he gave me, I got eyes to see it, essentially. That's where it's easy to get jaded in this world. Yeah. And especially with our current climate. And I'll tell you what, I'm like, you can give me the worst situation I'd ever be in, and I'll still come out all right. I know I will. So, you know, it's been a good place. I'm lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. Yeah, Jake and I were watching some of your stuff. You definitely do great stuff. It's awesome. It's awesome. Definitely great to see you using your voice in good ways, you know. So we also saw that you used to have a metal band. So you still do that at all?
Yeah, not near as much as I'd like. Man, I got all my kit. I got everything upstairs. But you know, we had Mark Colombo, Leonard Davis, and Justin Chapman. You know, everybody's doing their own thing right now.
Right,
and it's just kind of fell to the back seat where we have other priorities, and I still love my music, still love my metal, still love all that stuff. But, you know how it is. My family and my business comes before that right now.
Right.
But I'm glad you still got going on. I was very curious when I read about that, so I had to ask. But one of the last questions we really like to ask our who we bring on our podcast is your life is crazy all the time. Like we were just talking about, you got things going in different directions. And we have all the stuff going on with the world with the sickness and COVID and everything. So what do you do? Like, what are some hobbies you do to keep your mind and keep yourself sane with everything else going on right now?
Man, I read a lot. I tell you what, my stuff, and it has to be intentional because we're our natural tendency is away or to the bad, not to the good. And yeah. So, mm-hmm. I came at when I got my faith. I read my scripture. I read a ton of books. I listen to a ton of podcasts when I'm driving. And I mean, shoot, TED Talks, everything I possibly get my hands on, because I do. All of a sudden, I became an overflowing cup of information, essentially, and revelation. So I started getting these revelations in my life, realizing what God was doing in my past and currently, and which gave me a place that I could project vision for myself. And so that ended up being a huge deal. And so that's helped me to keep sanity. It's helped me to keep focus on my goal. Right, what my vision that I have for my life, and not get distracted from the enemy or anybody else that's trying to do that. The presidency, it doesn't matter who's going to be next.
Yeah.
Right? The guy I voted for isn't getting in. I don't care. It's not going to affect my life. Right? I have my family to hold up, and that's a huge charge and responsibility that I've been given that I have to take serious enough to know that I can't let outside distractors divert me from that.
Absolutely. What about anything else? Have you watched any like Netflix shows or anything like that? You watching anything in particular right now?
Oh yeah, dude. Come on, man. We're watching Deadpool last night, and that is a messed up show, man. The Cobra Kai.
The great show.
Yellowstone is my favorite right now. Like the country mafia. I mean, there's some insane stuff right now going on. I still love Netflix and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
There's a lot of that good stuff for sure.
That's awesome. Well, that's all we have for questions. Thank you for joining, taking the time to hop on this.
Heck yeah, man. Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. If you need anything, I know we're at a time limit, shoot me a message and we'll talk offline or something else if you guys want, but I appreciate it. You guys go kick some ass.
Absolutely. Will do. Will do.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you and meeting you.
Heck yeah. All right. Thanks, Jake. Thanks, Mike.
No problem.
Stay safe.